this deal. And he was committed to it, and right away we became friends. And he was the first male person that didn't want anything from me other than to just be like, you know what, I'm here for you, but sis. And he meant that, you know. We have been good friends for the last 15 years. And I will say that he's the first one that pulled me into service beyond the rooms. And it was more like, you know what, get in the car kind of thing. And we get there and I get to see what service at the district level looks like. And then I start to become part of it. And he still does that. He still does this deal. He works with tons of men. I can't tell you how many of his sponsees I met. I think the whole of Spring Hill is his sponsee, are his sponsees. And, you know, no matter what comes in life, you know, you do this deal and you're gonna see that life beyond your wildest dreams. And, you know, his story, you know, when I first heard his story, it kind of blew me away. Because I was like, you know, the person I met, from what he was telling me, it wasn't matching. But you know what, that's what we do. That's what our stories look like. So without further ado, I want to introduce Jose R. That's right.
Come on. I want to hear that love.
All right.
Go ahead. My name is Jose Rose. I'm an alcoholic. Can y'all hear me?
Hi, Jose.
Can you hear me?
We love you, Jose. Lots and lots and lots.
How much? Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
All right, my name is Jose Ruiz. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is October 29th of 1995. And if I make it, which I know I'm gonna make it through the end of the month, I'll have 30 years of continuous sobriety. In a row. I have a home group, which is the Fourth Dimension Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we meet every Friday night at the Presbyterian Church in Newport Richey. And if y'all down there on a Friday night, come visit us. We have a speaker meeting similar to this. And we'll love to have you. So let me just share with you guys a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like for me today, being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm the oldest of three boys. I was born in the Caribbean. I was born on a little island in Puerto Rico. And my parents moved to New Jersey when I was, I think I was 1 or 2 years old. And we settled in a place called Hoboken, New Jersey. That's in North Jersey in Hudson County. And we lived there for a couple of years. And then my dad had a brownstone, a home, and it caught on fire. And then we had to go up the hill to another town called Union City, New Jersey. And that's where we stayed until I was 18 years old. You know, the house that my dad had in Hoboken, it took time for it to get put back together. And then eventually he ended up renting all that stuff out. And we had another house in Union City, and we stayed there because my mom didn't want to go back. She didn't want to go back to Hoboken. I come from a very loving family. I couldn't ask for the best parents in this world. And I say that because, you know what? I was raised right. I had a mom that all she did was give us unconditional love. My mom never worked. My mom never, I mean, she worked at home. She took care of three of us. But to say that my mom had a job going to a factory or going, that never happened. My dad was the breadwinner. And that's just the way it was, you know? I mean, I grew up watching Fonzie and Eight Is Enough, you know, and I'm telling you my age, you know what I'm saying? But that's the upbringing that I had. And I was raised Catholic, and I ended up going to parochial schools. And this is a big part of my story, you know? And I'm gonna share this because this is why I started drinking. right? I was in parochial schools and I was about 10, 11 years old and I got sexually abused by a Catholic priest. And when that happened to me, my whole world, my whole life changed. You know, I became a bad little boy. I mean, a bad little boy. Alcohol did for me what nothing could do for me. You know, when that happened to me, I was terrified, you know, and I was afraid to tell my dad because, number one, I didn't want my dad to go to jail and I didn't want to lose my dad. So I held all that in for many, many years, many years. Eventually, I got kicked out of parochial schools because I got caught drinking their wine because that's what I did. I went, you know, and I started drinking their wine and I started being disruptive and I started behaving really bad. You know, at one point, they told my parents that they needed to take me to go see a child psychologist because of the way I was behaving. And I would go to the child psychologist and I would tell them exactly what they wanted to hear so they would leave me alone. I never told them the truth. I never disclosed anything that had happened to me because I didn't want my dad to go to jail. I didn't want to lose my father. My father was my hero. He was the man. From the age of 12 to the age of 16, I got in a lot of trouble. I ended up in juvenile detention centers. I ended up being disruptive with the teachers at school. I ended up going to a public school, and when I was 14 years old and I was getting ready to graduate high school, eighth grade, elementary, I didn't even graduate. They kicked me out because I just couldn't stop drinking. You know, I couldn't stop drinking. You know, when I share this with you guys, I'm not sharing this so you guys can feel sorry for me. I share this because I'm no longer a victim. I'm a survivor. And because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. But alcohol continued to be one of the greatest assets for me. You know, I'll share this quick little story. It was the summer of 1984, eighth grade, and we're rehearsing for graduation. So, you know, my dad has, up north, the houses have basements, not like Florida. So my dad had all his liquor stuff in the basement, his, you know, bar and all that stuff. So I told all my friends, let's go to my dad's house. We can drink, you know, and just, you know, have a few drinks. I was the type of guy that at the age of 14, when I took one drink, I couldn't stop with one drink. My disease of alcoholism was already rampant, full blown. Everybody got drunk. They went back to the school to rehearsal. I stayed home. I couldn't go back. So when they went back, they started throwing up in the gymnasium, and then they pointed all the fingers at me. So I got in big trouble. They suspended me from the graduation. My parents were out buying me a suit at Burlington Coat Factory. And I was so drunk that I passed out in the basement. And the truant, I don't know if you guys know what truant officers are. Truant officers are the guys that come and knock on your door at home when you're in trouble. The school sends them. And they left a red note. My dad, not knowing English, because my parents don't speak English, had the neighbor read the note to him. And the neighbor told him, you have to go to school because they want to see you. Your son's in trouble. So when they went, they told my parents that I wasn't going to graduate, that I got kicked out of the graduation. because of the drinking. So my mom came home, and that look on her face. I'm 55 years old, and I talk about this, and it still burns inside. She was crying, and she said, "We don't know what to do with you." So there, they took me back to the psychologist, and I just didn't talk. I kept all this stuff inside. So the principal told my parents, if he goes to summer school, we'll get him off to high school. My mom said, "You're going to summer school." My mom would dress me and get me out the door. I just never went. I hung out with my friends in the schoolyards, and we were just hanging out, and I just never went to school because alcoholics have keen minds, right? In my mind, I said, well, you know, my brother, I have a brother that's 1 year younger than me. I said, I can go to do eighth grade all over again, and then me and him can graduate together, and my mom and my dad would be happy. So when September came around, I showed up to the elementary school. The principal saw me. His name was Mr. Sanger. And he took one look at me, and he said, "Oh, hell no. We're not going to put up with another year of your shit." That's exactly what he told me. And he just signed off, and then they sent me to high school. I only went to high school because they sent me there. Now, when I went to high school, that was another experience. It was a terrifying experience. Because up in New Jersey, the school that I went to, you went from kindergarten to eighth grade, and then you went 9, 10, 11, and 12. So I was in the high school with a bunch of older dudes and older girls, and I didn't know what to do. I never made it through high school. I dropped out at the age of 16. Dropped out of high school. I was giving my parents a lot of trouble. Like I said, you know, I just wasn't, I wasn't fit to be among my peers. I didn't feel a part of. I felt less than. And I just didn't care about high school. The only thing I cared about was drinking. I drank every freaking day, you know, just to get by. I have an uncle that owns a plumbing and heating company in Brooklyn, New York, my father's older brother. And I was driving my dad, and I was driving him up the wall. And my uncle came and said, "You're coming with me." They took me to Brooklyn. I ended up with my aunt and my uncle. And then my uncle said, "You know, you need to do something with your life." So they put me into a plumbing apprenticeship program. I went and got my GED. And I started this plumbing apprenticeship program. And that was cool because I was making money and I was drinking. You know, and I'll tell you, you know, I went to school for 5 years. I graduated in 1990. And I turned out as a journeyman plumber in the state of New York. And working in that field, drinking was acceptable. Very acceptable, to the point where I get paid on Friday. On Sunday, I was broke. And I was making good money. You know, and when I graduated in 1990, my grandmother got sick, and then we had to go. My grandmother got diagnosed with breast cancer, so my mom took off to the island, and, you know, she called my dad, and she said, "If this is not good, I need the kids to come. My mom is asking for the kids." So I ended up in Puerto Rico. And I'll tell you, that was like, yeah, baby. What a change. So when I say that, is you need to understand, you know, I go from 20 to 30 to 40 degree weather in January, February, and I'm in Puerto Rico and it's 80 degree weather, and it's 90 degree weather, and back to 80. who the hell wants to go back to New York? And I got to meet my family. Like my mom's mom had 16 children, and my father's mother had 21 kids. So I had cousins that I've never met in my life. And uncles, because we were in the States, and I was going around meeting all my family, and there was no age limit for drinking in the island. And I had an uncle that worked for the Don Pool Puerto Rican rum manufacturing company. I had VIP exclusive drinking privileges for free. So I drank, and my grandmother died, and, at the very end, I met this young lady. Can't forget that, right? We had a house. I had a fence. She was very loving. She was very kind. We had a child. She got pregnant with my first child. When she was getting ready to give birth, I was not present. I was drinking. And when her water broke and they took her to the hospital, I was not there. My dad came looking for me. And they found me, my dad found me. He took me to the hospital. And when I got there, I was drunk. I couldn't hold a sober breath. And they put those babies in those little incubators. And they told me, that's your son, and there was no connection. I had no connection. And her dad was so pissed that her dad said to her, do you want to be with this piece of shit? And the only thing she said was, Dad, when he doesn't drink, he's my man. But the problem was, I couldn't stop drinking. She got out of the hospital and she went to her family's house because I couldn't, we had a house and she just went with her family and I promised her, I said, look, let's go to Florida. Let's go back to the United States. I had a buddy of mine in Miami, in Hollywood. I called him and I said, I need to make a change. And he says, come on, come to Florida. So I promised her if she would go with me, I would change. And we got to the airport, and that's how far she got. Once we were at the airport in San Juan, I had the baby in my hand, and she asked me, can I see the baby? I want to change his diaper. And so I gave her the baby, and I was like, I was still drunk. I gave her the baby. And she said, I can't go on with this. I'm going back home to my family. You get on that plane and you go. And we were already past customs, So she turned around and walked away. I got on the plane and I ended up in Fort Lauderdale. And the moment that I got on that plane, I started drinking until I passed out, and then they woke me up. And I didn't even realize I had landed. And I went with my friend Marlo, and I'll tell you, I got a job with one of the biggest plumbing companies in South Florida, out of Miami Springs, Florida, and they paid me very well because I'm very good at what I do, and I don't say that just to say that. I'm good at what I do. I worked with this company from 1991 to 1993. In 1993, I got fired because I couldn't stop drinking. I ended up homeless, living in a cardboard box in a park in downtown Miami called Bicentennial Park. Y'all see that part today on TV? Because that's where the Miami Heat played. But back then, the Miami Arena was on the cross the street in overtime. They weren't there where Bicentennial Park is, where Bayfront Park is. So I lived in that park in a box from 92 to 95. And there was a homeless center across the street from that park. It was called the Camilla's House. And they had a program there called the Change Group. There was a guy there by the name of Father Harry, and then there was a lady there by the name of Claire Madame. She ran that program, and she's the lady that wrote the Marchman's Act here in the state of Florida. And that lady became very special to me. You know, she always reached out to me, but I wasn't ready. You know, when you're not ready, you're not ready. It's just the way it is. The father would always approach me when I would stand on the soup line, because there were soup lines. I would go there Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays to take a shower, get my care package, and then I was good. Because I had a formula, you know. When I was homeless, I developed a formula. And the formula for me was this, and I'm going to tell you what it is. If I could muster to hustle to get $20 to $25 every day, I was good. I had my OE 800, a pack of Marlboro Red, and my MD-2020, I was golden. I didn't need anything else. You know? And I did that. I hustled and I made sure I had that every day. And I lived like that from 92 to 95. And I never got into any kind of trouble in the park, or nobody ever messed with me. I mind my own business. And my cardboard box was by the water. I was on oceanfront property. Right? I was on the intercoastal. I was living large, and I had a flat. When it rained, I closed my flap and I wouldn't get wet. And you know, for years, I never questioned like what was wrong with me. I just didn't care. I got to the point in my life where I didn't care. And then the day came on October 27th of 1995. I woke up that morning and I took a drink, and I couldn't feel the effects produced by that drink. And I was yellow. This is what they told me. I don't remember this, but this is what they told me. When I went over to the Camilla's house and I rang that doorbell, the priest came down and I said, "Do you have that bed available?" And he said, "We don't, but I know where you can go." So he gave me a bus token. And he says, "I need you to go to this address, 755 Northeast 79th Street. The name of the place is called the Little River Club of Miami." And I said, "Okay." He says, "When you go there, you tell them that we send you from the Camilla's house. You tell them that you need help." That was at 8 o'clock in the morning when I rang that bell. It took me until like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the afternoon to get up there, because I had a drink along the way. I just couldn't go there alone. And I was drinking and I wasn't feeling the effect, and I got to Little River and there was a bunch of guys in there and a bunch of gals in there. But this is what happened to me, and this is my story and this is my experience. I walked into that place and I met a guy by Airplane Frank. And I met a guy by the name of Hank. And those guys were old timers. And they welcomed me. They took one look at me. And they were happy that I was there. They were like, "Oh man, I got a wet one." You know? And they sat me down. They gave me a cup of coffee. I spilled that coffee on me because I was shaking. They took the cup away. They brought me another half a cup of coffee. This time it was a half. And then they put a straw in it and they said, do not pick up the cup, son. Just sip it. I still have that coffee cup today, 29 plus years later. There was a guy in there that was doing a step series. His name was Ray O'Keefe. He was starting the steps, and he was on step one. And I don't know, for some reason, man, these guys, these dudes, when you're new and you're green and you're like shaking, they put you in the front of the room. Right? So they set me in the front of the room, and Ray was doing the steps, and when he's done with the steps, he came off that podium and he like looked at me directly and said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's good to see a young man in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you make it back to another meeting. And then I never seen that guy again. That night, I had a black construction bag with my personal belongings. That was my suitcase. That was my luggage. And I was getting ready to leave, and that guy that I told you that greeted me at the door, his name was Frank. He said, where are you going? And I said, I'm going home. He said, you have no home. You know what I'm saying? And he said, is there anything we can do to help? And then he said these words, are you willing to go to any lengths? And I said, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And I don't even know where that came from. This guy had a 1970 green Cadillac convertible with white interior. And him and Hank, they put me in the back of the car. And I was getting ready to throw up, and he opened up the trunk. And he pulled out a bottle of Wild Turkey, and he told me to drink it. And I started drinking it. And I went from shaking to... And they took me to detox. I ended up going to this place called Central Detox on 22nd Avenue and Northwest 25th Street in Miami, in Alapata. And I stayed there for 14 days. And after I got out of detox, they took me to a place called Structured Treatment Program, STP. It was a residential treatment facility for men, all men, no women. And I signed up for 28 days. They kept me there for 9 months. That's to show you how sick I was. I was, at the end of 28 days, I was ready to leave that place. I wanted to leave. But there was a guy there by the name of Ronald Simpson. And I can use these people's last names because they're all in my life still today. Except Ray. Ray died. Ronald came to me and said, hey man, let us help you. You need a lot of work. And I said, I ain't got no money to stay here another 29, 28 days. He said, whoever asked you if you had money, all I need you to do is sign this paperwork. You're indigent. You're qualified. I didn't even know what the definition of indigent was back then. Okay? The only thing I heard was, you don't have to pay any money. So I stayed. And I stayed there for 9 months. And after the 9 month period, I ended up going to a sober living house for men that he owned and he ran, Ron, the guy from the treatment center. And then I went back to AA. So when I went back to AA, I went back to the Little River Club, and there's that guy Ray O'Keefe again, coming back again to do a step series. But this time around, he saw me and he came up to me, and he said, "You see that guy over there? His name is Al. That's my sponsor." He says, "You're going to be my pigeon." So he gave me a quarter, and he gave me his phone number, And he said, I want you to call me. And back then we had pay phones. I don't know but if you guys remember that. So I picked up my 9 month chip. They taped a quarter to it. And he said, I want you to call me tomorrow. I want you to tell me where you live. I'm going to come pick you up and take you to a meeting. And that guy became my sponsor. So I started going to all these meetings with this guy. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a pot to piss in. I didn't have a window to throw out. I didn't know what was going to happen with my life. I didn't know where I was going to go. I went back into the plumbing industry. I got me a job with another company. And I started working these steps. So I started doing coffee for this home group called the Miami Men's Group. I started cleaning coffee pots. I started cleaning ashtrays. The meetings were smoking meetings back in those days. I had a lot of problems. You know, we come in with a lot of problems, right? And I would tell Ray, you know, how am I gonna get a job? He says, when you're ready, you get a job. He was very, whoop, when you're ready. So he calls me up one day at the Sober Living House and he says, my wife is going to New York to marry for a week. I'm going to pick you up and you're going to come to my house and we're going to go through the book. And that was on a Friday. And he said, pack light because you're not moving in. You're going to be there for a couple days. I started going through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous on a Friday. By Sunday, I already had my first 9 steps done in three days. Had a list, and I asked him, I said, how do you know I'm on the 9th step? He says, listen, monkey, you're doing it with me. So I had a big list of amends that I needed to make. And I'll share a couple of them because they were very important to me. My sponsor, Ray, asked me, he knew me very well, about my son. Where's my son? Are you paying any child support? I'm like, I don't have to pay any of that stuff. She took him away from me. He says, oh, you're going to have that attitude. You're going to go back out to drinking. And he said to me one night, he says, tomorrow morning I'm picking you up and we're going downtown to a meeting downtown. He was an attorney. He was a professor of law. He was a judge. I used to go to these exclusive meetings with him. This guy takes me down to the Department of Children and Family and turns me in. He takes me down there and he tells the people, here he is. So they ask me for my social security, my date of birth. I thought they were going to arrest me, but they didn't. And they said, okay, we're going to start garnishing your wages. And I caught a big resentment with my sponsor for doing that. When I was working for that plumbing company, I stole money from them. You know, we alcoholics would like to justify a lot of this stuff. Right? I was a superintendent, I was a supervisor, they gave me a card, I had a credit card. One of the biggest responsibilities I had was to make sure that I had H2O water on the job to make sure the guys were hydrated, you know. But I would take that a step further, I would buy me. Back then, I still got this cup at home, a 7-Eleven Slurpee cup, those big ones. I would fill it up with alcohol, I'd buy a 6-pack on that card. And then I would buy my cigarettes on that card. You know, and I told my sponsor that was acceptable with the company. And he said, they didn't tell you to buy that. They told you to buy water. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, shit. So I had to do some financials, right? Like, I thought it was $15,000 that I owed them. And And my sponsor said, no, let's make it 30 for all the heartaches that you cost him. So I had to call this guy up, the owner of the company, and I called him up and I said, I need to make an amends with you. Can I meet you? And he says, yes, I'll be at the golf course in Miami Springs. I'll be at the country club. When you get to the door, just tell them that you're here to see me. So I went down there and I told him, I said, look, listen, you know, I don't know, but you know, I owe you about $15,000, but my sponsor says 30, so you know, I want to try to come in, you know, in the middle. I have a checkbook, and I want to make financial amends. I don't want to drink anymore. I said, I'm willing to go to jail if you want me to go to jail. And I said, what I can afford to pay you right now is $100 every 2 weeks. And he says, give me a check. So I gave him a check, and I kept sending him checks every 2 weeks. When I get paid, 2 years later, he calls me and he says, I need your help. And I said, what's going on? And am I going to go to jail? I freaked out when he said that, you know. He says, my son Wayne has a drinking problem. Can you help him? Mm-hmm. I understand that you are helping a lot of those plumbers in the industry with that A&A business that you do. And I said, sure, I'll be right down. So I went down to their office and we did an intervention on his son. I took him to his first AA meeting at Miami Springs at Mrs. Claire Madan's group. And Wayne's been sober ever since. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I kept sending him checks, and then he called me one day and he says, I don't want you to send me any more checks. I said, if I don't do this, my sponsor's gonna be pissed. And he says, I'll write you a letter for your sponsor. To relieve you of those duties. And I did it. And that was the end of it, right? In 2003, I got in trouble with the law. I got convicted for two felony charges in Naples, Florida. I'm not proud of that. That happened while I was not drinking. I was in sobriety when that happened. I was married to a young lady and I took her against her will and they charged me for that. And I got two felonies. There was a guy involved. I beat the crap out of him. I'm not proud of that. That's where the other felony came in. I just lost it. I got arrested. I went to jail at Collier County Jail. And my sponsor came and got me out. I did the probation. I did all that stuff. Matter of fact, the probation officer was one of us. She was an AA. I walked into her office and she says, what the hell are you doing here? Came to report, I don't want to go to jail. Because, you know, if you don't report, you go to jail. And she says, I can't believe this is happening. And I said, well, I can't believe it either, but here we are, right? So I did 18 months. They gave me 3 years of probation. I did 18 months. I went to all the classes. I had a bunch of classes that I had to do. Anger management, all those kind of classes. Pay a bunch of fines, a bunch of fees, and then they told me that I was in the clear to go, but I still had those two felonies lingering over me. In 2005, my sponsor had this idea that I should go and take the state test to become a state plumbing contractor in the state of Florida. And I told him, they're not gonna give me that license. He says, shut up, stupid. Fill out the application. We filled out the application, and you know in that state application, there's a part that says, have you ever been convicted of a felony? I put yes. Explanation. I said, please see attachments. And I stapled them, all the paperwork,
and I submitted it. 90 days later, we get a letter saying that I was accepted to be able to go and take the test. I did not open that letter. I gave it to my sponsor. I said, here you are. You wanted me to do this crap. I'm tired of being rejected. So he opened the letter and he says, they accepted you, monkey. So I was like, shit. And I'll tell you guys, I never wanted to go and get my master's license. I was okay just being an employee, a journeyman plumber. I was okay with that. So the state sent me another letter saying that I had to go to school. So here I am. I had to go to a place called Lutz, Florida. There's a school down there. So I would drive up every weekend, and I did that for 9 months. And then I went and I took the test in Orlando. It was a 3-day test. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, there was about 10,000 plumbers in the state, only 500 passed. I was one of those. And then I went in front of the board. There was this lady with a gavel, and she said, she called my name, and she says, come here, come here. And she says, do you know why you're here? And I'm like, no. She says, well, we got your application. We read everything that you submitted. We want to tell you that we thank you for being honest. Welcome to the state of Florida. We're giving you a plumbing master contractor's license. And I got my license. And I'll share this one last thing here. And I have a friend that's an attorney. I love those guys, you know what I mean? Attorneys, bankers. We were members of the same home group in South Florida for many years. In 2019, he was always on me about my felonies. You need to make this right. You have to apply to get a pardon. I'm like, Don, screw that. They're not gonna give me no pardon. And so we did all the paperwork. In 2019, COVID came in 2020. I moved from South Florida to Spring Hill. In 2024, we get correspondence from the state of Florida, and they granted me my pardon, you know, for my felony. So I'm clear. I don't owe the state of Florida anything anymore. I don't have that hanging over me. I got two other kids that are in my life, and I don't have much time, but I'll just share this real quick. I had two other kids while I was sober, and I screwed those relationships up. Sober. You don't have to drink to be screwing shit up, you know what I'm saying? So I screwed it up sober, and then I had to go back and make amends to my children. And thank God for AA because of the steps. I have them in my life. And today they call me Dad. Today my grandkids call me Papa. I got four beautiful grandkids, and I got one more coming. I was at a baby shower today, this afternoon. Today has been a hell of a day. Workshop in the morning, baby shower in the afternoon, and then I'm coming here to speak for y'all. All about AA, you know. And, you know, when I was leaving this afternoon, my son said to me, Dad, you know, you would have missed this if you would have been drinking. I thank God every day, you know, for another opportunity. You know, and if you're new here, if you're new, I want to tell you guys that Alcoholics Anonymous works. It really works. If you put the effort and you put the time into it. I continue to do this work because it continues to work in my life. The day it stops working, I wouldn't be around you people. But guess what? God proves me wrong all the time. When I got sober, brand new in sobriety, my sponsor said to me, I want you to do these things. I want you to wake up in the morning. I want you to ask God for help. I want you to ask God to put you where he would want you to be. I want you to ask God to put somebody in your path that you can be of usefulness to. And then at nighttime, I want you to say thank you. If you made it through the day, then you're sober. And he said, I asked him, and when do I stop saying that? He says, I'll tell you. He died in 2006, and I'm still saying it today. You know why? Because it works. I had no God when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Today I have a God full of love, kind, compassion. I mean, it's just amazing, the life that I live today. I have a cool little life. You know, I have a young lady that I live with that's sick today. We've been going through some health issues with her. And I'm able to be there for her, you know. I spent the last 7 days I was in the hospital with her. They found a hole in her heart, and then she had a double mastectomy, and there was an infection, and I'm like freaking out. And you know, it's like, but God does for me what I can't do for myself. And I have people in AA that I pick up the phone, and the language of the heart is always there. You know, and that's what I get when I come to places like this. I want to thank you guys for allowing me to be here and for asking me to come. Thank you for letting me share.